Well, folks, everyone knows it's cold out there, so cold that you've got to worry about your dog or cat bounding around in these very tough conditions. Today, we'll talk about exactly what you should be doing to help your pet handle all this nasty cold. And we'll also talk about some other big questions in the companion animal world. I'm talking about questions such as, why do animals yawn? Joining us, as he always does every couple months, Dr. Wayne Hunthausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital on Rainbow Boulevard in Westwood, the city of champions. Right, Wayne?
That's right.
I understand even last night, the hospital shook last night when the explosion occurred over at JJ's.
Yeah, we're about 12 blocks away on Rainbow Boulevard. And I had just left, but I called back and talked to my receptionist, and they thought somebody had hit the building with a car. It shook that hard.
A lot of folks thought that's what happened to their houses last night.
Yeah.
You know, it was that kind of thing. All over town, I think.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we've heard reports of pets that went missing in the aftermath of the Plaza fire. What should pet owners, you know, do to protect their animals when something like this happens?
Well, I think first thing, thinking ahead for any kind of problem where a pet might take off, make sure the pet has identification on. And beyond just, you know, collars and tags, you can have your pet microchipped. And that's probably the best way of ensuring that if somebody picks up the pet, whether it's a veterinarian, taken to a veterinary office or a shelter, that there's some identification there.
A microchip does what? What does that do?
It carries information about the pet. There's a very small chip about the size of a grain of rice that's inserted typically between the shoulder blades.
Huh.
And then with a scanner will pick up an ID number on that and also tell you what type of chip. There are several different types of chip. And so we can scan a pet and we'll get a number and we can recognize maybe it's an Avid microchip. And then we can use a 1-800 number, call the Avid company, and they can tell us who that dog has been registered to. We can get phone numbers and so we can contact the person then.
Well, that's pretty slick.
Yeah, it's great. Great technology.
If you find a stray animal that looks like it's been injured or traumatized, again, in the wake of what happened last night, what do you do? How do you approach all that?
Well, if you have a stray animal that's been traumatized, we're talking the pet's afraid. The first thing you have to be concerned about is pets that are afraid can swing into defensive aggression, and there's some danger there certainly. And so you want to be real careful. You want to go slow if you're trying to interact with the pet or get close to it. The less eye contact you make, the fewer quick movements you make, the more relaxed the pet's going to be. If it's a small pet, like maybe a little Chihuahua. You might take a heavy blanket and wrap it around the pet to pick it up, and the pet will be more comfortable and you'll be safer doing that.
Hmm.
With a larger pet, you can take a leash and slip the end of the leash through the handle on it and make sort of a slip noose type leash and slip it over the pet's head. But you certainly need to be careful. It could be a stray wild dog. Maybe it's not been vaccinated, or cat, and you've got to be worried about rabies here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pet's not completely relaxed and you're not sure, or if you're uncomfortable, call animal control.
You know, we're visiting with Dr. Wayne Hunthausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital. Wayne, I was struck last night, you know, firefighters were using these cadaver dogs to sort of comb the wreckage of JJ's restaurant, to looking for and not good things. How do they protect dogs from getting hurt when they're searching through rubble like that? I would imagine a dog would be vulnerable to all kinds of things.
There's certainly a risk for these dogs, and they do go through enough training that the pets develop better balance than the average dog, and know how to navigate through problems like this. They're more careful. You take the regular family pet, you put it in an unusual situation, and a lot of odors and smells are going to be running all over the place and be in more danger. Training helps out. In some cases, they'll have protective booties on the dogs, so that'll protect their paws if they're glass shards or other dangerous things.
Yeah, I would imagine that you got to do something because that's just such a tricky environment. Okay, again, Dr. Hunthausen is in the house. If you have a question about the unusual behaviors of your dog or cat and want to call in with a question, you can always do that when Dr. Hunthausen is here. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. Well, people bundle up in wintertime, Wayne. Should you bundle up your dog, too? Because I'd ask about cats, but I don't think they didn't let anybody touch them to bundle them up like that. But maybe I'm wrong.
Right. They don't put up with much.
They don't put up with much. Yeah.
Well, it depends on the pet. And the pets that have low body weight, low body fat, thin hair coats, and whether this cold, they definitely benefit from having a sweater or a polar fleece covering on or a vest. So whippets, greyhounds, little chihuahuas, some of the small terriers, all these dogs can benefit from that. On the other hand, some of these big northern breed dogs like Akitas, the German Shepherds that have a good dense undercoat, they've got a lot of insulation to try out with it, and they can tolerate some really cool weather during a walk.
But do you recommend bundling them up a little bit when it gets what we're going to experience the next few days?
You know, I've got a dog that we rescued now. He's 10 months old, and he's a standard poodle Akita mix. And I turn him out in the morning, and he'll go out there and lay and roll around in the snow when it's 18 degrees out there and loves it. So he doesn't need a jacket. But I would recommend it for some of these other dogs. You have an older, let's say, yeah. For example, an older Chihuahua that's kind of thin to start out with. You know, that dog definitely should have some protection.
Okay, again, if our listeners have questions about the behaviors, the unusual behaviors of their dogs or cats, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org. Is there anything to be cautious of here, Wayne? Are some animals allergic to sweaters or hats, or am I reaching too far there?
Oh, it's possible. You mm-hmm. could contact allergies are not real common in dogs and cats, but you know, I mean that could be a problem. I mean it should be very noticeable. The pet's fine except when you put the wool coat on and then it's itchy, and that's how allergies typically manifest themselves in dogs and cats is by itchy skin rather than some of the other signs that we see in people.
So for dogs that and cats that are vulnerable to the cold, how cold does it have to get before your warning flag goes up and you would be advising people to do something to take care of their animal when they're outside?
Well, it really varies so much from pet to pet. When it starts getting below about 15 degrees, then I start getting worried about some of the older pets and the pets with thin hair coats for walks and spending any significant time outdoors. Dogs that have heavier coats, again, the northern breeds, young, healthy dogs, you can get them out there at 0 degrees. And as long as they've been acclimated, you know, I wouldn't take a couch potato dog that's never been outside during cold weather and just take it for a long walk. But they can tolerate some real cold weather.
You know, you also hear about the salt on the sidewalk and in the streets this time of year. That can be tough on paws, right?
Certainly. And if your dog is a hairy dog and there's a lot of hair between the toes, it's more likely to pick up salt. Or during long walks, if you go out and hike with your dog on a winter day when there's a lot of snow on the ground, they'll pick up ice balls between their toes. It'll accumulate in the hair, and that can be very painful. So if you plan on spending time outside with your pet during the winter on walks or hiking and it's going to be snowy, it's not a bad idea. You can get some beard clippers really inexpensively at the pharmacy and clip the hair out from between the toes or have your groomer do it for you.
Yeah. How important is an outdoor shelter for some pets this time of year? Some kind of doghouse, some kind of shelter out there?
Well, if the pet's going to be outside, I wouldn't want the pet out in weather like we're having this week. Mm-hmm. I'd want that pet inside. That said, you look at the dogs that run the Iditarod and they live up north, and they live in some of them live in basically barrels outside, and the snow piles up, and they do well. They slowly acclimated. They got these nice thick coats. But if the dog's going to be outside during cold weather, it should have a dry doghouse. It should have a flap with a good seal so there's no wind that's blown through the opening
and maybe
there.
Maybe turn the face of the house away from the wind,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Very good idea. Put it on the side of the house where there's less wind. And usually straw works better than bedding in the bottom of a doghouse outside because if your dog picks up some snow and lies down, it melts and you got a puddle in the blanket, and then that freezes. The dog's lying on ice, basically. But with a really thick layer of straw, as the ice melts, it'll seep on down below and keep the dog will still be relatively dry.
Well, this will come as a shock to you, Wayne. Lots of phone calls lighting up the board here. Whenever Dr. Wayne Hunhausen's in the house, lots of phone calls come in for folks with questions about their dogs and cats. Let's go to some of them now. And Nancy from Kansas City, Missouri. Nancy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a question for the doctor. I have a little toy Maltese that we've had for 2 years, and we got it from a shelter. They thought it was about 4 years old. It is occasionally aggressive to some of our family members. It's never been aggressive to me. It's occasionally aggressive to my 9-year-old. Kind of doesn't like my 11-year-old. And
that's not
good. I'm just wondering what we can do to change the behavior. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's a protective behavior. It seems like if it's around the other dog that we have, it's protecting that dog, and maybe I'm just all wrong. But
yeah, well, typically, if you're talking about protective aggression, you see a pet that will stand in front of or between a certain person or pet in the household in standoff towards another animal or person that's approaching and show threatening behavior. Is that what you're seeing, or are you just seeing the behavior occur when the other dog's around?
No, I mean, it'll occur that way, but it'll growl at us, and then it does nip at us occasionally. Not me, but the girls.
Okay, and what situation does it nip at the 9-year-old?
When she, like, if she'll come in the front door and she's kind of loud,
uh-huh,
and then kind of booms through the door, then the dog will kind of go at her and nip at her heels.
Okay, and if she comes through quietly, she's okay?
It seems like it, yes.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. Let's just talk about this one situation then.
Mm-hmm.
So what we know is the child walks into the door and is noisy and the dog doesn't like it for some reason. We don't know if it's protective or territorial or if it's just doesn't like loud noise and loud noisy
right.
kids.
Right.
And so what we want to do is not teach the dog that you need to dominate it or that it needs to tolerate that situation, but actually want to have the child come in and be noisy. And what you do is you have the pet on a leash to make sure the situation's safe, and you have some really special treats like small pieces of hot dog. And then what you do is you ask your daughter to walk in through the door quietly. So the dog shouldn't respond if she does that. You have the dog sit for a piece of meat, and then you have your daughter go back outside again and then come in again, and same thing, sits for meat. And then you have your daughter come in a little more quickly each time and a little noisier each time. And
okay.
Over maybe 100 repetitions. And so what the pet starts learning is, gosh, when the child comes in and it's noisy, that's a cue that something good's going to happen. And you're doing some counter conditioning, which is teaching the dog to anticipate food and something good when the child comes in instead of anticipating something bad that might happen.
Okay.
That said, there's a problem in the relationship with the pet's challenging family members like that. And there are a number of other things that need to be done. Typically, obedience will help out. Nothing in life for free programs. The pet has to sit before it gets anything from family members. Starts getting this idea across that the family's in control and shouldn't challenge. So aggression's a really complex situation. That'll help with that one situation. But you may need some help looking at the whole problem and putting in place a really good plan.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Nancy, thank you. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Deborah from Overland Park. Deborah, you're on with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. Good morning.
Hi, doctor. How are you?
I'm well. And you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm walking out of a restaurant where we'll have a little more quiet. I have a 14-month-old miniature Australian Shepherd, Nail. From the time I brought him home, and unfortunately I learned that he came from a puppy mill, but from the time I brought him home, he has drooled copiously in the car. He hates the car. I've had several trainers work with me.
Hey, Deborah, let me cut you off. You're going to have to go somewhere we can get a clearer reception with you. So call us back at 816-235-2888. Let's go to Charlie here from Lawrence. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, doctor. I was actually calling because I have a small dog. We believe it's part Papillon, part Dachshund. And she got a haircut this winter by my girlfriend's mother, and the hair just did not come back. It kind of was a little, had a few wispy spots, but then a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago, her hair actually started to come in, and she's missing spots. One is under her collar, and then the other one is like a little hair about her shoulders, and then she's bald again on the top of her back. I was wondering what might cause that or if hair is going to come back.
Well, the first thing I would do, or the first problem I would rule out would be hypothyroidism. And low thyroid secretion is probably the most common hormonal problem that we see in dogs. And one of the things you'll see sometimes is slow hair growth. And so if the pet's shaved, the hair comes back very, very, very slowly. There are a few other more unusual problems. And if the thyroid test comes back negative, in other words, the thyroid secretion is normal, it may require a biopsy to determine why the hair follicles aren't producing hair anymore.
Okay, excellent. And you have time for one more question from me?
Yeah, fire away, Charlie.
Excellent. I also had a question about her eating habits. I had heard that if a dog brings its food to you and eats in front of you, then it's a sign that it doesn't like the food that it's eating. But we've switched up a couple brands, and it just seems like she wants to eat with us.
Is that true, Wayne?
I think your interpretation is probably correct. And if the dog doesn't like the food, typically it won't eat it, or it might use its nose and shove the bowl around, eat real slowly. But I think if she's bringing the food to you and eating, she just likes you a lot.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Well, that's a good time then.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Rodney from Kansas City, Missouri. Rodney, good morning, and go briefly, quickly, if you would,
okay.
Rodney.
All right, thanks, Doc. So I've got a 10-year-old indoor house cat, and who just, no matter what I try, he's got a pretty bad batting average when it comes to doing number two in the litter box. I've got three litter boxes in the same room, and he's going to break up my marriage if he keeps it up.
Okay.
And for what it's worth, I don't go number two in the litter box either way. I don't blame the cat. I don't do it either.
Does the stool look normal? Is there any signs of constipation or blood or mucus or anything, diarrhea?
Runny.
Okay. You need to get to the veterinarian first, because anything that causes discomfort, where it's a bladder infection or constipation or maybe colitis in this case, might cause a cat not to use the litter box. So that's the first thing that I would do. And then if you get that cleared up, give me a call back and we'll talk about the behavior issue.
Wayne, it's always good to have you here. Thanks for taking the time. Sorry we couldn't get to all our phone calls, but you'll be back sometime soon, okay?
You bet.
That's Dr. Wayne Hunhausen from the Westwood Animal Hospital.